Well, welcome, podcasters. Today is a great one. I've been looking forward to this one. Bob Asman, MBA, CCXP. I mean, you know how passionate I am about customer experience. He's the founder of Innovative CX, an experience management firm. I mean, it's really not only about designing opportunities, it's really about the execution, which I'm so excited to talk to him. Bob's been diverse. He's been in the global operations for decades. I remember some of the things I've read about you just as the thought leader that you are in the industry. You're also an instructor at University of Minnesota School of Management and Rutgers, which is pretty cool. In case you tell, Bob, I'm not from Texas originally. I'm from the East Coast, so I know exactly where that is. But today we're going to talk about the satisfaction stagnation. And really what we're doing is why your AI strategy is killing your CX, which I know is very passionate to me. But more importantly, hopefully today we're going to uncover some things and ways to fix it. So I want to welcome my podcasters. Bob, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to start out, and this is great, Bob. So I'm going to start out with just some hard-hitting questions so we can get have a conversation together.
I love it. That's okay with you.
Absolutely. Good deal. So as a fellow published author in AI in the contact center, we're seeing billion-dollar AI investments. But we're also seeing, and by the way, me personally experiencing, these satisfaction scores, CSAT, NPS, they're not budging, right? So is the industry itself lying about what success looks like? Or are we just automating bad processes to start? That's my hard-hitting one to get going.
So let me just give you a little bit of maybe a core thought process that I have, Jim, having been in the contact center industry for 25 years, customer experience, customer service. We do the same thing with technology every time. When we get new technology in the contact center, what's the first thing we think? How do we cut costs? Ooh. We don't say to ourselves, how do we apply this technology to improve the profit, improve the experience, improve the relationship? I mean, Jim, you and I are old enough to go back to when chat was first introduced, right? Oh, we were so excited about chat, another channel we could deal with customers. What happened? We gave agents 3 and 4 chats at a time to manage and wondered why customers got upset because there were so many gaps in the length of time it took to chat with an agent because it was a cost reduction. So to respond to, I think we're doing the exact same thing with AI, but this tool is thousands and thousands of times more robust than a chat box was, box, B-O-X, not bot, B-O-T, was, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And we've got that same mentality. And so now we're saying, oh, we have AI. That's going to improve our customer satisfaction. That's our silver bullet. We've been waiting all these years for the silver bullet. That's our, now it's AI. And we're going to, by golly, it's going to solve our customer satisfaction problem. And guess what? It's not.
It's really not. And it's funny you say that because I remember, you know, I've been with eTech for 24 years. And I remember when I started chat. And yeah. I remember all the people in the industry saying, it's going to remove all of our jobs. Remember that? Like, oh, this is going to remove all the agent jobs, right? And you're right. Everybody says agent can take 2 to 3 at a time. But at what cost and what expense to the experience for the customer? And then Right. Now we're hearing the same thing about AI, like it's going to remove all your jobs. You can't automate everything, by the way. It's just never going to work. It's proven that it won't work. And I think you're onto something with the cost reduction because I'll probably upset some podcasters today because IT shouldn't be making these decisions. And I think that's the biggest problem. IT makes decisions with a CFO whose only bottom line is the bean counter, and they don't really engage the people that are doing the job every day to tell you, here's what we can do. I mean, great, great insights on that one.
Hey, Jim, I wrote an article 4 or 5 years ago. Are we putting the cart before the horse when it comes to IT? Because to your point, we've got tremendous technology and tremendous organizations to deliver that technology. But I can't tell you, and I was in the technology side of the business for a very short period of time, but I can't tell you the number of times customers said to us, hey, our customer satisfaction sucks. We need to fix it. I need to buy new technology. And I'd say, okay, great. I'll sell you the technology. Tell me what your satisfaction strategy is. Tell me what your experience strategy is. What do you mean? I said, well, that's where we start, right? That's how we align the technology of what you need to the strategy. Yep. And that's why it'll work 1,000 times better when we put it in because we've aligned to the strategy.
So it's funny you say that because I actually owned IT for a few years at eTech until they kicked me out. And I think they kicked me out because I would ask those tough questions that I've learned from having friends like you in the industry is I understand you want to get this shiny new tool and this new dashboard that's going to show all of these things, but look at how cool it is. And like, but what is it doing for the agent experience and the customer experience?
Right.
Well, but look at it, please. All right. Number two.
Yes,
so
sir.
This is an interesting one for me because obviously, you know, I run a lot of QA. You know, eTech's got 4,000 people across 10 sites globally. And I still talk to people who say they're only sampling 2% of their calls to run their business. And they're relying on Net Promoter Score, CSAT, and all that stuff that we talk about, right? In a world today where you can, because we both are tech people, technology exists. You can actually, you know, you could take in 100% of your calls, right? So what do you think the CX leadership is afraid of, why they don't want to look at everything?
Hey, Jim, remember that election polls are based on a sampling of 1,000 registered voters. And there are, you know, 150 to 200 million voters that vote. So they do samplings of 1,000 registered voters and tell us who's going to win whatever election it is. So kind of keep that one in mind, okay? Here's the thing. Again, just going back a little bit, put this in context. Yeah. First of all, my overriding belief is don't collect data unless you're going to do something with it. So I don't care if it's 2% or 100%. If you're not going to do something with it, stop. Just because it feels good or you can put it on a, you know, if you're a publicly held company, you can put it on an earnings report. Don't do it. And I encounter this all the time where mounds and mounds of data is being collected and we can't do anything. And by the way, to your first question is, I interviewed a podcast guest that I had a few weeks ago that is utilizing the power of AI to collect all this information and drive real change. And so I was really impressed by that. So I think here's a great use of AI is collect all this customer information we're getting from qualitative or quantitative sources. Maybe it is 100% and find out how we can apply it in a closed loop system. I surveyed the data. I got the data. I looked at the results and now I'm going to do something about it. And then tell your customers, we heard you and this is what we're going to do about it. And I just don't see a lot of organizations. I know they're out there and I know there are organizations that are leading this charge, but we're getting too, I think, you know, feeling good about some surveys, like you said, a 2% survey and, oh, boy, we made our goal. And yet, you know, we see retention falling down or we see other indicate revenue per customer is down, retention's down, but boy, our satisfaction is up. Well, there's something wrong, and you better deep dive into that satisfaction to find out what's wrong.
You're absolutely right. It brings me up to a story. So I'm big in a data perspective. As president of ETS Labs, an ETech global company, I'm all about the data.
Right.
I don't think you need 100% for life, by the way, because I tell people this all the time. You know, when I say 100%, you should do 100% in the beginning to get your baseline of where you're at. Now, if the leadership does what they're supposed to do with the data, we would say it would get better, and then you could bring some of that ingestion down to a 30% valid statistical sample size. And when you talk about collecting the data, it's funny you say that one about these people who use surveys. Surveys, you're going to get 4 to 14% response rate if you're lucky. Right. And I tell people this all the time. There's three reasons I fill out a survey. One, you went above and beyond. Physically impossible on every interaction. two, you pissed me off so much that I want to complain. Mm-hmm. Or three, you bribed me with the $5 Starbucks gift card.
Right.
And then people are making data decisions on that small sample set. And then when I would go in to your point and say, hey, listen, I looked at all the data. Really, you're failing in here, 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 here. No. Our NPS score is, yeah, but it's on 100 interactions. I mean, it's mind-boggling how people can do it. I had one customer, Bob, but you'll love this one. They were bought into this platform that we provide and says, hey, this is going to be a game changer, because they were only doing small. And when we released it and showed, I pulled 100% ingestion in all their interactions, the scores were so bad, the leader at this company says, I can't produce this. I'll get fired. So I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do red, green, yellow, no scores. And let's work on it. And it took about 90 days. But in 90 days, the numbers came up to a level that was acceptable to be able to publish because it actually got better. Like, they were so to the bottom. Like, she said, I'd get fired if I ever showed this. So we worked with the red, green, yellow simplicity things. And then we created, and I'd like to get your input on this. So when people are analyzing things, numbers, analytics, and dude, I'm an analyst, so I get it. I came up with these three words for her. And she loves it, and she uses it to this day. How about we do gets it, getting it, needs improvement. She's like, what does that mean? Well, if you get it, that means you're doing it really good. If you're getting it, in the middle, it was okay, but could have been better. Mm-hmm. Or you need an improvement, period. End of story. It's yes or no. And she was like, this is game changing, because a lot of these people use 5-10 point scales. Right. Why? You either do it, you don't do it. And what can I do to get better? That's a great one. I love that one. Thank you so much.
Well, of course, and there, when you're doing that, you're bringing in emotion and perception, which is a totally different, that's the game changer part, is, wow, you're relating directly to the customer. One other comment I'd have for you is, a number of years ago, I had to present the very first satisfaction study I was working at this organization. I had to present it to the executive leadership. And I started out the conversation. We prided ourselves on 99.6% accuracy on our orders, okay? So we were a manufacturing company. We manufactured the products. We prided ourselves on 99.6%. And I started the conversation off by saying, do you know what 0.4% error rate means? So 99.6 of our orders go out correctly, but 0.4% have an error. Do you know what that number is? And most of the leadership, and no, I'm not being critical, and said, no, but they started to try to calculate it, except the head of manufacturing was there, right? And I said, well, 0.4% error rate equates to 1,000 orders a week going out wrong.
Wow.
Right? And first of all, I thought I was going to be shot right there from the head of manufacturing for bringing it up. But it completely turned the tables on the perspective. We stopped looking at we always looked at 99.6, but we started looking at what's causing the error ratio. Different perspective. So
it is. It's funny you say that one too. I have a story, and I have a manufacturer, well, actually a retail company who sells clothing, let's call it. So what we found doing our analysis, there was an issue. All these pants were coming back. And an agent is just clicking it, customer service, return product. We dug into the analytics. The zipper kept breaking. That's a manufacturing issue. That's not a quality issue. I mean, for the call center or for the it was, and we were able to tie it back and show him it was specifically on the product itself. And that's really what I like about the data. Yeah, it seems like you're doing the same thing. That 0.4% is a great example. You know, let's dig in deeper. Like, I go level one, level two, level three. Mm-hmm. Dig down to find the root cause and then come up with a solution to fix it.
Absolutely.
All right. So I'm very passionate about AI, as people know who are following me, and probably you as well.
Yes.
But I'm also, I talk a lot about adding the human back in. Right? Because if you think about it, I call it human in the loop at E10. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most AI that I've seen, or at least the 50 emails I get a month telling me they have a revolutionary new AI product that's going to remove all my people. It's AI, a lot of it's been designed to deflect humans. How do we stop using tech to hide our customers for that experience that they're expecting and bridge those two together? Do you have any insights on this part of it?
So with these questions, Jim, I always go back to my core beliefs and values. And at the core is, as an organization, do you want relationships or transactions?
Oh, I love that.
And of course, the answer is usually both, right? Because our customers want both. They want a transaction that's easy and it's easy to do business with you and so forth and so on. But they also want a relationship. They want you to recognize the value that they bring to you. They want to be recognized as a customer and appreciated as a customer. So I used to call that the know me, help me, value me values. So again, the core belief here is, as an organization, you want relationships and you want transactions. If you're using AI to make more efficient transactions, fantastic. Make sure you're creating an easy to do business with environment using AI. Then, and because that's basic, you know, if you go back to an airline, what's the responsibility of an airline? Forget the peanuts and the seats and the overhead bins and the extra luggage. It's to get you from point A to point B safely.
Right? It doesn't happen all the time. Let's be clear.
Right. And so nothing else mattered. Everything else is fluff. So as an organization, what's your baseline? Right? You got to get the transaction right, or you can't get any other thing from your customer. I think you can really balance AI appropriately by saying, let's use AI to get the transaction right. Use the data we're getting out of that transaction to drive better products and services, better value, and then we can create the relationship with our customer because the AI knowledge we have. And now we can start being very personalized with the customer about what their needs are. Hey, you, not just these, you know, well, you bought a pair of pants and so we're going to sell you a belt, but no, you bought a pair of hiking pants. You know, you must have an interest in hiking, et cetera, et cetera. Now the relationship goes whoosh.
You're right. You brought up something that resonates with me when you talk about the using the right tools to make a good transaction and still have that relationship. And I think where a lot of companies get it wrong is a lot of them will buy technology, and let's just call it a bot or call it whatever you want, right, for that transaction. Mm-hmm. And marketing usually creates them and works with IT to create the responses going back and forth. And then when we get that terrible experience, we're escalating to a human because it couldn't answer my questions. And I think we're sitting on the largest data set in the planet, which is all those interactions we already had. I've already figured it out at eTech. I don't know why other people haven't. Why not take those interactions and create your bots out of those calls, even the frequently asked questions? And I look at people who will scrape a website. You know, like I remember a customer of mine came to me and said, I said, hey, you're getting all these calls for this product. And they're like, yeah, it's on the website. I said, take me to it. It took 11 clicks to get to the information. This is ridiculous. No wonder they're calling your call center. And when I was able to show them that, they actually fixed it. They moved it to the front and they dropped their call volume by 30%. That's got to be improving your customer experience because people were on hold, as you know. The guy was telling me he needs more agents. I said, I don't really think you need more agents. I think you need to fix this process. Right. And that's what I come from, a school of thought. There's three things you could bucketize. People issues, which leadership's got to fix. Process, which we know is not always perfect. And then, of course, there's always technology. How do you make the technology better? And by making the AI smarter, and I laugh at these people who come to me and say they built this revolutionary self-learning AI, machine learning. You plug it in like Ron Papel's rotisserie, you set it and forget it. It's the biggest lie in the industry. The machine is only as smart as the person who coded it and programmed it for what it to do. It's dumb in the beginning. You got to tell it what to do. Exactly. So I think we're aligned on that one.
You know, Jim, have you bought a car lately?
It's funny you say that. I just bought one yesterday.
Okay. So I don't know what your experience was, but probably the second biggest purchase somebody makes in their life, first is a house, Second probably is a car, yep, based on how expensive they are these days. So I am stunned by how terrible the car buying experience is in terms of saying, I've got cash, I want to buy a car, right? You click on a car on a dealer site, you say, I want to buy this car, and you get some generic response that has nothing to do with the car. All right, when can you come in? Here's another car for you. Wait a minute. I clicked on that brand new. That's the one I want. I don't need to look at any other cars. That's the one I want. I've done my research. I want this car. And then it continues to send you, you know, AI-generated virtual agent communications that have nothing to do with it. And I'm thinking to myself, whatever the cost of a car, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000, and you're sending me an AI virtual agent to make the second biggest purchase of my life, it's baffling to me.
Well, now I have to call it out. So I was going to buy a new car. I didn't really need one. So I like to buy a car when I don't really need something.
Love it.
You know, so I went on their website, local here in San Antonio. I filled out all this stuff. This is the car I want. Found the car I want. Boom. Gave in all my trade information. I said, listen, what's the best deal you can give me? Right? I get the response, and it was you could tell it's canned message. When would you like to come in and see the car? I said, but I've already picked it. So then I said, screw this. Excuse my mouth. Let it go. 3 days later, I get an email from a sales rep saying, hey, I saw you were on the website, you know, again, doing this. Right. And, you know, it's AI generated. And I responded back to them, and I said, if this is the way you serve your customers, the odds of me buying a car from you are slim to none, because I sent you on Saturday and I sent you the email I sent. How much out the door? I'm ready to go paying cash. Done. Right? And I said, now it's 6 days later, you're responding to ask me to come up and look at the car. Right? And she responded back. So it obviously got escalated, because then a human being picked it up and then said, we are so sorry. I don't know why I didn't get this email. Well, I know why you didn't get the email, because it was automated.
Right. Like,
and it's, I went up yesterday and I met the manager at this dealership, and I went to pick up my car, and I told him, I said, I don't understand that, you know, you guys have been pretty good since I came to visit you, right? So I'm ready to buy it. So I signed all the paperwork like a couple days ago. And then of course they said, we're going to detail, we're going to do all this. So my wife and I went yesterday to pick up the car, and I'm signing the papers, gave my car in. My wife says, hey, I think there's something wrong with your car. I said, wow, it's brand new. It's a 2026. She goes, look underneath. So it was like filthy underneath. Like literally underneath was like filthy. So I walked. I said, excuse me, I'm not going to take the car today. I said, you guys are going to detail it. I said, you said you were going to detail it. I said, you haven't even detailed it. I said, I'm not taking it. So the manager came out and like just apologized 100 times over and says, man, I'm so sorry. I'll get it done for you right now. I said, no, take your time. It's no big deal. I don't need a car. I said, I'll come back another day. He literally got his whole freaking team together, which I thought was positive, and said, guys, this is unacceptable. Where we said we detailed the car, and if we said we detailed it and the customer saw all this black dirt underneath, and it's obviously underneath the car, like that's not a detail. So they actually cleaned it, took care of it. Offered me all these products, by the way. Let me give you this. I'm like, no, I don't need anything. I'm a CX guy, so I get it. I understand it. But I will tell you, the manager got it. He understood it. And he actually solved the problem in real time, which is why I did bring my brand new 2026 Genesis G80 home last night.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Absolutely.
It's all about the recovery. You can make a mistake, but you got to recover from it.
And I think that's the problem, because so many times, I think both of us in our careers, you know, I remember one time I went to a dentist office, and I booked my appointment online to a dentist here in San Antonio. And it was on a holiday. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. They're not even open. I wouldn't think they were open. So I drove down, because I got the email, says your appointment's today. I drove down, walked in. They were having a party because it was a holiday. And I said, I have an appointment today. And she's like, no, we're not open today. I said, wait a minute. Here's my paper. I have the appointment. She's like, that's not my fault. I didn't schedule it. That was somebody else. Well, your company is right here. So needless to say, I've never gone back to that dentist's office.
I bet not.
Oh my gosh. So when you think about the, I have two more questions when we talk about this risk, a lot of people are worried about this AI with Big Brother, right? Mm-hmm. And what people are saying is, how do you build a culture for your employees to understand we're using AI to enhance, we're not tracking everything you're doing per se, and we're really, you're not being watched. We're trying to make it so you have the tools to be successful. Because, you know, in the contact center industry, we always say we give our agents the tools to be successful. But not everybody does. Like, how do you fix that in the organization to say, I'm doing this to help you from the user perspective and not watching what you're doing? You have any insights on that?
Well, Jim, do we think that AI is the first time that people have been concerned about being watched? I mean, you know,
never thought about that.
Facebook, you know, you say to your spouse, I need to buy, you know, pick something, you know, a new suitcase. And all of a sudden you go on Facebook and you get all these ads for suitcase. You go, what the heck? You know, Google is watching. I mean, Amazon's collecting all this data. I mean, it's not, AI isn't the first kid on the block that's suddenly tracking everything. And I can remember 15, 20 years ago, I was in the BPO industry, but I was working with some other, I was trying to pick some suppliers for us. And I walked into one contact center and they had somebody sitting in between the men's room and the ladies' room with a clipboard. And when an agent would go in, the agent would say, my name is Bob. And they would write down the time and they time how long they were in the bathroom. Big Brother's watching. But to your point, it's all about the culture, right? It's all about the culture. If agents feel, if it's a robust culture, if it's an engaged culture, you know, a lot of that goes away. You could be transparent about what you're doing with AI, but if you've got a, you know, a toxic culture, there's nothing going to fix that.
My holy grail on this one is I've never used that analogy. I'm going to use that one because you were 100% correct. Anything my wife and I talk about, I'm getting an ad for it.
Right, exactly.
But I never use that analogy because the kids are all over Facebook, Instagram. I don't even have TikTok. My daughter sends me stuff. And I'm like, I don't have an account, nor do I want to meet. Because it's funny, we see all them tracking all that data, using it against you all the time. But we have agents who are worried about, I'm listening to your phone call.
Right.
All right, last question.
Yes, sir.
This is the one we're going to talk about from if you were to walk into a boardroom and actually talk to the CEO or, you know, a C-suite, and they're obsessed with what we talked about from question one. Bob, I need to cut costs through automation. What is one uncomfortable truth you tell him where you can help them with their brand? Because we talked about number one, everybody wants to cut expenses. But if you were talking to the CEO who's obsessed with nothing but automation, nothing but cutting costs, what would be the uncomfortable truth you can teach him during this meeting?
You can't cut your way to growth.
Love that.
You know, a number of years ago when we were going through the financial crisis of 08, 09, 10 in that area, we were in the financial services, legal services industry. I was working for a company at that time that was in that. And the CEO stood up in front of everybody and he said, let's understand something very clear here. Our customers are going through a terrible time right now. Some are going out of business. Some can't pay their bills. This is a tremendously difficult time for them. And we're going to be right there with them. We're going to let them not pay their bills for a few months. We're going to give them subscriptions for free that help them get through this. Because when we come out of this, and you know we will, when we come out of this, we want to be their supplier of choice. And we all sat there in stunned silence of what he was saying. And when we got through that crisis, the loyalty we got from our customers 5-10 years later would say, they got me through the worst time of my business. I will never go anywhere else. And they tell that story. Hundreds and hundreds of customers told that story. So that's the uncommon truth I would say to them is, yeah, we have to. I get it. You know, I had P&L responsibility. I had CFOs coming to me every quarter saying, cut costs, cut costs. You know, I had a $300 million budget and they would say to me, you mean to tell me you can't cut 1% of your budget? You can't cut $3 million? And I'd say, but I'm all labor. I'm 95% labor. 1% of my budget, $3 million equals, you know, 1,000 agents. So it really is about, you can't cut your way to growth. You've got to balance that growth and cost containment.
I love that. What a great story. There's not a lot of companies out there that would do that in today's world, I don't think. That loyalty goes a long way. It's kind of like, I know personally, I've had experiences with companies or brands where it went above and beyond. I will give you one from years ago at Lowe's. So I was having this big party at my house, and I had to buy a new grill. Went to Lowe's, bought this grill, big one. I said, okay, I got to go get a truck to bring it home. I go up, I come back, the grill's gone. Like, what do you mean the grill's gone? Oh, so, I'm so sorry. Somebody else sold it. Don't worry about it. We'll get you another one. We'll put it together for you, we'll get it done for you. You can come back tomorrow. I said, how does that help me? Because I'm having a party today. So the manager came out and says, what's the problem? I said, I bought a grill. Here's my receipt. One of your guys sold it. I'm having a party today, and he doesn't have another one put together. The guys went out one step. He says, I'll tell you what. See this one? It's a bigger, much bigger grill. It was probably about $600 more. He goes, if I give you this for the same cost, would that solve your problem? Absolutely. I'm loyal now. Right? That's loyalty because, you know, he solved my problem. But there's not a lot of companies or brands that do it anymore. It's just terrible. Well, anyway, this was a great session. Just to recap some of the things we talked about, like cut costs is definitely not the way to go. That's what I heard, right? You know, why are you trying to cut the costs when you need to fix the experience? We talked a little bit about the chat world. I remember that back in 2000. They laughed at me, Bob, when I said chat's where it's at. My license plates in 2003 had chat because I said chat's where it's at. I used to run the chat business at eChat. And, you know, the AI, if you're really investing in AI, you really got to think about the experience. Another one that hit home for me is like, man, if you're gathering this data and you're not doing anything with it, it's just a waste of time. Make sure the data collected, you're going to be able to change something in the organization that's going to help your customer and yourselves. And I loved your quote, do you want transactions or do you want relationships? And I think we all agree we need both, but they have to be strategic. And the last part about it for me personally is I'm using the Facebook analogy. I never thought about using the Facebook analogy, but it is so true. They are listening. My phone is going to be sending me Bob Asman type ads today. I know it. Right. So, Bob, in closing, I wanted to thank you so much for doing this routine. But how do people get in touch with you? I know you're a great publisher, lots of stuff. How do people find you if they want to talk to you or read some of your articles or read some of your published stuff? How would they get in touch with you?
It's been a blast. I appreciate it. You can my website is innovativecx.com, or you can reach me on LinkedIn. And also bob@innovativecx.com. I'd love to hear from you. Love to be linked in with all of your listeners. I learned a lot from them too.
Oh, absolutely. We'll make sure we put it in the comments on our posting. So everybody just click the link to make it effortless, as we talked about, Bob. Let's make it an effortless experience for people to connect with you. Bob, thank you so much for your time today. You have a blessed week, and I appreciate you so much.
Thanks,
guys.
Jim.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.